You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. And today, we have a few different professionals with us today. We have Susan Philo, who is a mental health therapist, and Jolene Rogers, who is a school clinician. And we also have Carly Franz, who is with marketing. And she actually suggested this episode at this particular time because winter is approaching, and we know that can have an impact on our moods. So we have a couple of people who are aware of the effects of winter and are willing to share some of their knowledge with us today. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Say, what's your background? How long have you been here?
Well, I'm Susan Philo, and I moved to Kodiak 6 years ago. I've been in the mental health field for over 15 years.
I'm Jolene Rogers. I've been in Kodiak for about a year, and I've been in mental health for probably 3 years now.
All right. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, why don't you explain a little bit about what your job entails? So, Jolene, what's a school clinician?
So our role in the schools is not to do therapy because it's not an appropriate place to have a kid triggered and send them back to class, but our role is to work with kids on social skills and coping skills and just skills that equip them with ways of handling what they're feeling and helping them identify their emotions and understand what they're feeling so that they're able to return to class and return to home and feel like they have better control over themselves.
And what about yourself?
And the role of a mental health therapist is to help people that are dealing with problems that are bigger than what they can cope with at the time. And sometimes they do have a diagnosis. Sometimes they don't. But, you know, it's you just walking alongside them and giving them tools to help them cope with their problems and kind of work on those resolving those underlying issues that can contribute to them.
Is there a distinction between therapist and psychologist?
Yes. A psychologist has a PhD in psychology. A therapist can have a PhD. Most therapists either have a master's degree in social work or in counseling psychology or psychology.
All right. And we were talking about this just before the show, but there is still somewhat of a taboo, isn't that right?
Right. And there's even been talk about changing even the terms. I mean, we used to be called mental health. I'm using the term mental health therapist, but it's gone to behavioral health. And now there's talk of using the term emotional health because there is a stigma because, you know, obviously there are some people that struggle with very serious, what we would used to call mental illnesses. Now we call them mental health disorders. That definitely are scary to people, you know, like severe mood disorders, manic or depressive symptoms, or symptoms where people are not in their right mind, such as, you know, schizophrenia. But most people have times in their life when something's going on that's just kind of beyond their ability to cope. And it's perfectly fine to go see a therapist, you know, to have someone with an objective point of view that can help support you through that time. The grief and loss would be an example of that. That doesn't mean that you're mental, you know, that you have a disorder. I don't like the term disorder because I believe that most people are coping the best they can. And if you have to look at them in the context that they're in and it's just normally an adaptive response to a very unusual or difficult, you know, situation.
And from my own personal experience, some of my friends consider going to a therapist just like a weekly checkup or something like that. There might be, again, just in my personal experience, a generational gap. Like, my parents aren't listening to this, so I can say, but my parents definitely have a different perspective about going to a therapist than I would, or people my age might from where I'm from. So have you noticed any change in how mental health is considered over the years that you've been in this job?
I'll let Jolene speak to this as well, because since she is a generation or two younger than me, I I'm old enough to be her grandmother. I do think that there has been less stigma attached to seeing a therapist. Definitely Hollywood, you know, stars seeing therapists has helped with that. I think of Sinead O'Connor. You know, I mean, people have been very open about seeing a therapist and how much that's helped them. But there is still definitely a stigma because, you know, there's such a variety. You know, you can, people have severe problems to very minor problems that, you know, they're functioning quite well.
I think there's obviously a generational thing going on, but I think it's getting better. I think kids are starting to talk to their families openly about what their needs are and say, hey, I need help. And parents are beginning to recognize, okay, maybe something is going on that they need to talk to someone about. And I think it used to be looked at with shame, and now it's starting to get put into a place where it's accepted and starting to become more normalized within society. And I think that's really good. I was fortunate. My mom was a counselor, and so I obviously didn't have the same challenges with my mom accepting counseling if that was something I would have wanted. But yeah, just I think that it's there, and I think it's getting better every day. So,
all right. And if any listeners have any questions, you can call up at 907-486-3181 and talk to our professionals here. Also, just keep your ear out, and if any of the issues that you hear about on the radio ring true for you, you might want to look into that and see what you can do about it. First of all, for instance, the winter blues. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So yeah, during wintertime, as we start to lose sunlight, our moods start to get a little bit lower. And it's pretty prevalent for a lot of people, especially those of us living in Alaska. I mean, we obviously have very dark winters. And so it's important to be aware of changes that might be happening in your body and your mood and noticing it's not a bad thing. A lot of people are dealing with it. And there's ways that you can easily overcome those feelings in order to make yourself feel better and get through the winter.
Right. And so less light kind of equals less energy, but less energy does not necessarily mean you're depressed. It just means you're slowing down. And I think people confuse those two. It's natural to slow down. It's actually adaptive because the temperature is colder. Used to be the food supply wasn't as plentiful. Now we don't have that problem, but it's kind of seen as maybe an evolutionary response to what cold weather would be. And so it's just normal to slow down. And I think in our fast paced lives, and we think we can do so much, we think, oh no, you know, I need to get, there's something wrong with me, but there isn't. And I think that's the biggest piece to it, is to not feel like there's something wrong with you just because you don't, your energy level's going down.
As far as I know, there appear to be two different theories about why your mood changes. It could be chemical, and the daylight and the darkness can affect it. And then there's the weather in Kodiak, and you can't go hiking anymore or as much, or climb mountains in the same safe kind of way anyway. So could you talk a little bit about the elements that kind of change with the seasons?
It's definitely, in the summer, it's really easy to be active and get out and enjoy the sunshine. And during the winter time, you get off work and it's already dark. And so you're like, well, I can't go on a walk now, or I can't go on a hike. And so finding other ways to get that energy and get that same feeling is really important. And you can do exercise in the house, but there's a lot of different activities that you can do that will release similar feelings and make kind of balance out that the lack of what you get in the summertime.
Right. So with lower energy, you know, we tend to want to eat more. You know, we tend to gravitate towards those high carbs because that does, you know, in the short term, increase our energy. But of course, that tends to make us gain weight. And then if we're not as active, which we tend to be less active in the winter, then that can add to feeling pretty low about yourself. So as Jolene mentioned, you know, trying to find ways to get regular exercise, and that can even just be a mini break, you know, just getting up from your desk and doing some jumping jacks, or there's lots of, you know, quick energy kinds of yoga stretches or things like that that you can do to just up your energy level. And even just going outside during the lunch hour when there is sunlight, since, as Jolene mentioned, when you get off work, oftentimes it's already pitch dark, you know, and just go for a 15-minute walk. Those little steps can really make a big difference in just your overall outlook. And you know, just catching yourself when you want to, you know, eat a little more, and then allowing yourself to sleep a little more. It's okay. It's okay to sleep a little more. You if you're sleeping, you know, too much, then that can be, you know, a little worrisome. You don't want to be sleeping much more than, you know, your regular hours that are effective for you.
Right. And I just read something somewhere about the feelings that tend to trigger these unhealthy habits, like overindulging in food, like boredom, loneliness. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, loneliness, of course, that's another piece to the winter blues, because we're cabin fever, we're locked up, you know, in our houses. We don't want to go out because it's icy. It's, you know, the weather's depressing. But even just picking up the phone and calling a friend, or making yourself, you know, if you're feeling lonely, and a lot of people do live alone. That's a sad part of our culture. Just thinking of somebody that might be lonely too, like somebody who's in a nursing home, or usually, you know, somebody that could use a visit, and going and visiting them, going someplace that, you know, going to church or some other social activity that you enjoy, to kind of push yourself to get out the door and do that, that will make a big difference in your mood.
Yeah, definitely. And when you're feeling lower in your energy and in your mood, you tend to want to isolate and stay in your house, and the weather adds to that with the ice, and you're like, oh, well, I just won't go out today. But again, calling someone, doing art, journaling, just helping someone else with something can really just elevate your mood enough, and it avoids that isolation where you just sit in those feelings by yourself. And so that's really important, to get out and get out of those feelings for a little bit.
And speaking of the tendencies that the winter months encourage, do people tend to go out more towards the bars and go out towards the places that might be open, which are the bars?
Yeah, there's another piece to it, of course, and it's not just alcohol use. Caffeine use, which is so predominant, you know, that's another temptation. You know, I'm feeling low energy, drink more caffeine. Or I'm feeling bored, I'm feeling lonely, you know, go to the bar and then overindulge. I mean, you know, the old adage, moderation in everything, is, you know, appropriate here, you know, to kind of catch yourself. You know, if you do need to take a 20-minute power nap or whatever it is, that's preferable too than, you know, getting high on caffeine and then experiencing the low, which no one enjoys, particularly yourself.
As far as naps go, is there an ideal nap length?
You know, apparently 20 minutes is the ideal nap length. Some people seem to not be able to do that, but more than that, you get groggy, and less than that doesn't feel restful.
So, I have found that for myself. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes, yes. Mm-hmm. 3 hours, might as well just have gone to bed.
Seems to be the case.
Right. And as far as why exercise makes us feel good, why does it have that effect?
Well, exercise releases serotonin in your brain, which is why we feel low. When there's less sunlight, there's less serotonin in our brain, and I won't go into all that because that's not where my degree is. But exercise kind of counteracts that feeling and releases those chemicals, so it makes you feel better. I had a friend a couple weeks ago that didn't understand why she loved running so much, and when I talked to her about it, I was like, oh, your mood's so much better right now than it was 3 hours ago, and she's like, oh, that's because I ran. Well, you release serotonin and it makes you feel better. And so even just within 20 minutes of doing an exercise, it can make you feel better. So,
do any of you do lunch break exercise?
I'm trying to institute that. I used to walk to work, but I'm thinking I'm going to start walking at noon now that it's getting dark. And that really does, the times I've done it, it really does elevate my mood. yeah, it gives me energy for the rest of the day.
I find that too, but then you get all sweaty. And how do you fit a shower into your, like, 40-minute lunch break?
Well, my lunch break is almost non-existent because I work in a school, so there's almost always a child in my office. Mm-hmm. But just even taking a 2-minute walk down the hall to pick up a kid reboosts my energy enough that I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's get the next one in. So
all right.
Brief little intervals of exercise can help too.
That makes me feel so much better about my walk from work and to home. So I'm like, 10 to 15 minutes, I'm practically a superstar right now. I should feel overjoyed for the rest of the day. So maybe we should talk a little bit about how you distinguish between SAD, SAD, and some other mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. So seasonal affective disorder, we no longer call it that. It's actually... For major depressive disorder, it's a modifier with seasonal onset. So it's normal for people to feel low energy in the winter, and sometimes that leads to some depression. But to actually have full-blown SAD or seasonal affective disorder, it looks something a little more extreme, like you can't get up in the morning, you're oversleeping, you're overeating, which we already talked about, but that doesn't mean you have this diagnosis. Low energy, difficulty concentrating, withdrawing from your friends and family and social activities, feeling pessimistic, feelings of hopelessness, lack of pleasure. I think that's a big indicator that maybe you need to see somebody for help. And the good news is that there's a few simple things you can do that can really make a big difference. And most, you know, starting with seeing a doctor, because you can check your vitamin D levels. And by the way, everybody who lives in Kodiak or in Alaska should take a vitamin D supplement. It's up to your doctor to determine how much you should take. And also, you know, if to test to see if you are vitamin D deficient. Also, light therapy, using a light box, and that's beyond the full spectrum. It's more than that. So you do need, some insurance companies will pay for it, and you do need the doctor to prescribe that also. But you can order them. You know, you can find them and just order them online. And you need to sit for 30 to 60 minutes daily, you know, by them. So those are actually, and then an antidepressant, you know, Jolene spoke about the lower serotonin, and obviously it would be ideal if you got that through exercise or other means, but sometimes an antidepressant can really make the difference. So again, you would see your doctor for those interventions. Therapists can kind of help with your thinking about yourself and about how the world is working for you. So that would be why you would see a therapist, to kind of help you get out of that pessimistic, negative thinking pattern.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not everyone is comfortable with seeing a therapist right now, and that's okay. And there's things that you can do just on your own that can help you feel better and just, again, get you out of those feelings of loneliness for a little bit. So think about taking a class or trying something new, or just planning a night out with your friends and giving yourself something to look forward to at the end of the week. Trying to be grateful for one thing every day, or just laughing. Like, find some funny cat videos on YouTube and just laugh for 30 minutes. And it's funny because we talk about laughter therapy in our team meetings over at Providence, and it's funny how much that works, but it really does. It makes you feel better. It's hard to be angry when you're laughing hysterically, so... It's little things that you can do to just help you feel better throughout the day.
Can SAD, what's the new term for that?
Well, it's just major depressive disorder.
Oh, okay.
With a seasonal modifier now.
I see.
But everybody calls it SAD, so it's SAD. I mean, it's SAD that it...
So
that's what we know it by.
What I'm hearing is that it doesn't really... appear in everyone. It kind of appears to people who already have a tendency towards depression.
Well, not necessarily, because, you know, these people that actually do what we have full-blown SAD are fine the other months. And actually, there's a summer, people get it in the summer too. Mm. So that's a strange one, too. That looks more like irritability and anxiety, and it's less common. But those people seem to be especially affected by too much light or not enough light. And that's kind of a neurochemical kind of a thing. So depression is complex and can have multiple causes. So people that have SAD may not be depressed at other times of the year at all, you know.
Can we talk a little bit about what the symptoms look like as far as manic depressive, depression?
Yeah, so the symptoms I mentioned for SAD are actually, you know, the ones that where you think, well, I better get some help. Those are the same symptoms that you're looking for, you know, to as criteria as do, you know, am I at the point where I need help? See, depression is a normal response to loss, and I think we all have this alarm response to it. It is normal to feel depressed when you're facing something that you can't do anything about it, like obviously the death of someone or some diagnosis that you're, you know, that's going to change your life. It can be many things, and it's a normal response. So it's when you're not pulling out of it after a certain amount of time, and what that time is different for different people too. So it really does vary. But when you find that you're going, you know, that it's lasting maybe, you know, I don't want to say a certain time because then people might be alarmed if theirs is lasting longer than what I say. So, but if you're getting to the point where you're not able to focus at work, you know, that you're never feeling happy, that you have no pleasure in activities that usually are pleasurable, you know, if you can't concentrate, if you're finding yourself irritable and you're if it affects short-term memory, you know, that you just can't remember things, you can't do complex tasks, you're finding yourself, sleeping all the time, or you have no appetite. That's the most common, actually, is not sleeping well and low appetite, but some people sleep all the time and have an increased appetite. So, you know, there's, you know, especially that, you know, the feelings of hopelessness and that chronic low mood that affects your ability to function, then it's time to get help.
And is that manic depression or what?
So there's also, these are affective disorders. There's also a disorder that's bipolar disorder, which is an energy dysregulation problem. And we're talking about low energy and depression. Well, with bipolar disorder, people have, we don't really know why. But the part of the brain that regulates energy is not working right. So they either have too much or too little energy. You know, we all can have those kinds of times. But when it gets to be like too out there, a manic phase is when the person has high energy, they're very goal-driven, usually at some point have lost insight into how they're behaving and how it's affecting others. They don't feel like they have a need to sleep, and they get grandiose thinking. And usually you can see things like overspending and hypersexuality. And it's really literally, there's nothing going on in the prefrontal cortex that says cause and effect. If I do this, then this will happen. So that's a manic phase, and it can look, that's an extreme one that I just described. It can look hypomanic as a less extreme, but the usual course of depression of a bipolar is to be depressed most of the time, with occasional manic episodes. But there are some people that have rapid cycling. But, you know, people can have varying degrees of this. It's not a disorder until it's affecting their ability to function. So that's what to keep in mind. You know, reading the diagnostic statistical manual, you can look at that and go, oh my gosh, I have this, I have that. But, you know, unless it's really getting in the way of your functioning, you know, it's kind of normal mm-hmm. mood swings.
Is there a difference between how youth experience that versus adults?
We were kind of talking about that before the show started, in that kids and teens tend to be more rapid cycling with those moods, and you would probably not recognize it as bipolar because it happened so quickly. You just probably consider them to be moody. but it does happen in kids. I think it's more common for the rapid cycling to occur with them, though, in comparison to adults, whereas adults have it over a longer period between the mood disorders.
And with kids, the depression often looks like irritability, acting out kinds of behaviors. It doesn't necessarily look like morose like you think of when you think of the word depression. So that's another thing too.
And that was another thing we talked about as well, was that kids may not know exactly what they're feeling, or they may not have the words for that. And so even just talking to them and being, hey, what's going on? What are you feeling right now? They may not know what that is. And so giving them those emotions and saying, hey, are you feeling angry? Are you feeling sad? Are you frustrated? And just equipping them with those words can help them better understand what they're feeling, so that when they do feel it again, they can go, hey, mom, hey, dad, I'm sad right now. I need somebody to talk to. And, you know, that's one way to help kids in a really simple way.
All right. And we only have a minute or two left. Is there anything else you want to leave listeners with?
I think the main thing to remember is that there's nothing wrong with asking for help, that there's little things that we can do that can boost our moods and really make a difference. One thing we didn't really touch on is suicide. And actually in the winter, suicide rates are not as high as they are in spring and early summer. But we didn't have time to go into that. But if, you know, sometimes when people get depressed, they get so tired of feeling this way that they start thinking of harming themselves. And there's so many, it's really not that complicated on how you can help someone. Don't be afraid to listen. I mean, for any of these problems, don't be afraid to listen to each other. Don't be afraid to ask for help. There's lots of help. We have a plethora of mental health providers in this community.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as friends of somebody, if you see somebody with a low mood or whatever's going on in their world, it's okay to ask them. And it might make them angry for a minute, but after they think about it, they'll go, you know what, I am feeling that way. And as a friend, you notice that and care about me, and that's important.
All right. Thanks for tuning in.